You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Brandon Grace claims his ninth European Tour title with victory at the South African Open in Johannesburg.
You know, this is the one I really wanted to get my hands on, and you know, being obviously the second oldest event in the world as well means a lot, and it obviously means a hell of a lot to win it in South Africa in front of home fans and things like that. You know, what a fantastic week it's been.
We'll speak to Brandon later in the show as we review all the action from a brilliant 4 days of golf in South Africa. Then we'll look ahead to the next stop on the European Tour. It's the first Rolex Series event of the year, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and today I'm joined by former European Tour player turned commentator Ewan Murray. When did you turn?
I'm not sure I've reached that point yet, but I'm getting closer.
And golf journalist Matt Cooper, who's driven all the way down from Iron Bridge.
Almost. Oh, good memory. Yeah, that's right.
I went a school trip, you see, Iron Bridge, Shropshire and Iron Bridge. They're just Isambard Kingdom Brunel. It's all stuck in there somewhere. South African Open, City Johannesburg, 6,000 feet above sea level, and the ball goes a long way, Ewan.
It surely does. If you're looking for extra yardage and you don't want to buy a new driver, just slip down to Johannesburg. It's worth about 10 or 12%.
Brandon Grace, if you just said at the start of the week he could win, everyone realised that, but hasn't had a lot of fantastic form coming in here.
He had a lot of poor form last year. He was second at the Phoenix Open, third at the Donnell Championship at the end of the year. But between those two tournaments, some sort of 9 months, he didn't have one top 25. But he had a new putting technique at Leopard Creek, and he obviously kept it over Christmas. And he had nine one putts on the trot in that final round, 62 yesterday, to complete the victory.
62, Ewan, on the Firethorn, the harder of the two courses. It's not easy.
It's a good number for him. He's the only one who shot 62 in the majors. That repeated itself yesterday. To go on from the nine single putts, 22 putts doesn't happen very often, 22 putts in a round. But, you know, the one thing I felt watching him was Grace never forgot how to win, because he has had a couple of rough years by his own high standards. But as soon as he got into that back nine and reeled off four birdies in a row, he remembered exactly what to do at that time.
It's funny because he was chasing Oosthuizen, who probably came in as the tournament favourite, and he had a quiet start, pars all the way, I think, until the eighth where he had an ace. Another, I am the hole-in-one guru. If I'm covering a tournament, someone has a hole-in-one, just to rub it in, because I've never had one. Matt?
Yeah.
Have you had one?
I've got four, actually.
Four holes in one. You see, it gets worse, doesn't it? What was the longest club you hold?
Five wood.
Oh, stop it now. That's terrible. Really?
Yeah.
Five wood.
My favourite one, actually, was the fourth, because the first three...
Well, you've got four to go through.
Yeah, they've been beautiful shots, and then the last one spooned it up in the air. I'm not kidding. It hit a manhole cover, sprung forward, did a wall of death round the bunker, was flying across the green. I turned away in disgust. My mate went, I don't believe it. I turned around, hit the flag straight in.
As a one.
Yeah.
No guilt. And a massive bill for you, hopefully, when you got in.
No guilt whatsoever.
That's terrible.
A new meaning to playing like a drain.
Yes, well, we drained it. How fortunate is that? So Oosthuizen, nothing happening, gets the hole-in-one. Then you would have thought Ewan, from that point, he was going to kick on. It didn't really happen for him.
It didn't happen because Grace didn't allow it to happen. I think that's the difference there. And if you looked at the top two, when the pressure came on over the course of the last few holes, neither really gave an inch, but Grace had done all the work.
Brandon Grace, how good is he?
Well, here's a stat for you. It was the 10th win for him since the beginning of 2012 across the PGA and European Tours. And the only players with double-digit wins across the two tours in that span, Rory, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, Tiger, Justin Thomas, Brandon Grace. That's a pretty elite company to be in.
So he's in there with some heavy hitters, no doubt about that. What sort of a golf course is that, Ewan, when you're trying to hang on or do what Grace did and try and birdie your way in?
Well, the thing in South Africa, it's a very different playing surface. It's Kikuyu grass, which is the native strain of grass down there in Africa. And it does take a bit of learning. It does take a bit of playing. Pitching is very different off that type of grass. So it was no surprise to me to see so many South Africans in the top 10.
Having said that, with our European boys now, the European-born players travelling so much and playing South African golf courses so much, is that true nowadays? Can we say that the South Africans have a massive advantage?
Yes. As far as the playing surface is concerned, they don't have the advantage they had 30, 40 years ago when bent grass wasn't on the greens in South Africa. You still had the same grass. Coarse, you had a lot of grain balls, used to run uphill, difficult to read, and strike was very important. So I think if you go back in the 60s, 70s, they had a massive advantage. They still have that advantage because of the Kikuyu.
So does Louis view this as one that he let go, or does he view it that he was just beaten by the better player?
Well, it's a tricky one always, isn't it, this sort of thing, because he was three shots ahead of third, or was it two? So he's basically beaten everybody in the field bar one man who caught fire in the final round. I remember, I think it was this time last year, we chatted with Gordon Brand about this, and he said he's always got to say that...
The late great.
Yes, and he made a great point. He said he remembered weeks such as this and gave himself a pat on the back, whereas you were saying that it wins at all costs. That's the thing that ultimately you're determined by. But Gordon said, no, give yourself a pat on the back when you've done something pretty good like that. And it's not like Louis had a bad final round. It was just a slightly becalmed one.
Do you think just by comparison then, he might get a little bit down on himself, but really, 69 when you're leading, you've got a comfortable one. I mean, some guys had to shoot 62 to get to you.
The last event I did at Round Park, Retief Quirson won it, and Darren Fickard was second, and it's the same story. Darren did nothing wrong in the final round, but beaten by the better player on the day, and I think that's the way Louis will look at it. You look at the way Louis's been all the way through his career, nothing too much troubles him. So I think he'll get over it fairly quickly.
And there was the sort of sub-context of this tournament was there were three spots available for the Open Championship in the summer, and that was a pretty close-run thing. Some interesting characters made the top three.
They did, and a little side issue of this, it's a strange thing, but when golf has multiple winners, which is very rare, something like the Grand Final when people win their cards, Q School... and then these events, when people have spots up for grabs to get to the Open, you have multiple storylines on the final day, and it really brings something a lot to the game. And in this case, Brandon Gray's picked up one of the spots at the Open, and he'll be very pleased because we already mentioned he had 62 at Birkdale. But Jaco Alles is quite a character, big burly Afrikaner. I've bumped into him at Turnberry, and he is very much.
Did he flatten you when you bumped into him, or
he didn't? No, but he was very very unknown when he came over there, and he was quite a funny guy because he didn't play very well, and he admitted to us that he wanted to stay unknown because he was slightly embarrassed by his performance. I think he'll be doing a lot better this year.
But is he as funny as Marcus Armitage?
Probably not, but Jaco Alles is a very good player, an extremely good player. We're talking on the Race to Dubai show that Chase to the Investec Cup is the equivalent on the Sunshine Tour, and he won that in a playoff against Jaco van Zyl over at the Lost City Course by Sun City. He's a player who's been reluctant to come over to Europe, as so many have. They have maybe a young family and think, I'll just keep playing in South Africa. This lad is capable of playing with the very best. It didn't surprise me that he challenged in the end either.
All right, well, pleased to say that Brandon Grace, the most recent winner on the European Tour, is on the line, somewhere in transit, going somewhere. Brandon, many congratulations. A fantastic win. It must be a relief to you after having a little hiatus before winning this one from your last one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks very much for having me, guys. Yeah, it was awesome. I tell you, it's obviously been a rough couple of years, and it's nice to finally get over the line again and winning such a prestigious event. You know, as a South African, this is one of our flagship events and the one that you really want to win. And it's just amazing to win it in South Africa, win in front of home fans, and obviously to seal the deal the way that I did with a superb final day. And it was just awesome. And then it was nice to have the family there, my wife and the little one, and you know, what a good birthday present it was to her. And what a way it was to finish it off and to capture the US Open.
You look back on the final round, what did you feel was the key shot, key moment?
I think there was two, really, to be quite honest. I think there was the first one was the par save on 8. Didn't really hit that bad of a tee shot on the par 3, just pulled it a little bit and then didn't hit the best chip out there to about 15 feet and managed to make that. And that was a big momentum key there. And then on 10, when I hit the drove it to the right into the trees, kind of took it on the chin and just went sideways and told myself, you know, I'm playing well, I'm hitting my irons nicely, just go straight at it, and managed to knock it into 2 feet. You know, I think that was the big keys for the day, saving the par there, didn't lose the momentum, and then let the putter do the work coming in from there.
Brandon, I think afterwards you called your round remarkable and you golfed flawless. You sounded delighted with your game.
Yeah, I was. You know, it was one of those where, you know, I felt I've been playing some solid golf for the last while, and you know, the scores just haven't been there. I feel that I've put in the time and the effort and the hard work, and I've worked really hard on the part of my game that I really needed to improve on, and one of those was putting. You know, I've put a lot of hard work in with Brad Faxon over the last couple of months, and you know, it's paying off. And you know, felt that, you know, normally coming out after holiday, you know, you maybe play a little bit more golf with your friends and things like that, instead of really putting in the hours on the range and things. And you know, I really put in the time and the effort before I came out, and you know, it's all paid off. So the golf was definitely there. It was just a matter of it happening. And you know, I think that the 7-under the first round really gave me that boost and the confidence, knowing that those scores and things are out on that golf course. And you know, obviously, you know, I knew there was, with the weather conditions we had, I knew there was a low one out there, whether it's going to be me or somebody else. You know, it was up for the taking. So just happy that it was my day, and you know, what a special day it was to finish it off with a 62.
Just 22 putts in the final round. Much talked about at the end of last year, the changes you made to your putting. Can you give us a brief explanation of that?
Yeah, you know, changed pretty much everything, to be quite honest. You know, I've always been a streaky putter, I would think. If I needed to explain it a little bit like that, you know, I've always thought I had a good stroke. But, you know, I had weeks where things go in and weeks that things don't. You know, when you see Brad, I really enjoyed the way that he did things. It wasn't just really jumping the gun and then, you know, changing things straight away. It was more of, you know, really see what I'm doing, that sort of thing, and really taking time and try to explain to me what we need to work on. You know, we did a lot of things from ball position to hand position to forward presses, to hit position, to everything. You know, and it's taken a while to get used to, but I feel that it's settling in. Obviously, you know, there's still a couple of old habits here and there that creep in every now and then, but I feel that those things, I'm getting those things more under control as time goes on. And, you know, I think that was probably my best putting display I've had in my life. It was just amazing. You know, I told one of my friends yesterday, it wasn't that, you know, I felt the hole was getting bigger. It was just so easy to just commit to the targets out there and commit to the lines. And my mind was just really, you know, was kind of out of it, you know, just kind of picking the spot and just letting it go. So it was really remarkable to have a feeling like that on the green yesterday.
Louis pushed you all the way, Brandon. I bet you were pleased to get one over on him.
Yeah, I did. You know, when I was standing on the 19 and he hit it in the hole, I told my caddy before I even heard the crowd shouting his name, I knew it was Louis. You know, and I thought, here we go again. You know, this is what's going to happen. This is what happened last year. And, you know, I just told my caddy, I was walking off 9. I said, I don't care what he does. I'm just sticking to my game plan and I'm going. You know, I told my family, my wife the night before, and my manager, I said, listen, I need to be tied with the lead going into the back 9. And as I said, if I can do that, I'm going to be there. So, you know, I gave myself that chance and, you know, just grab it with both hands. And on the back 9, when things really mattered, it paid off and I took it. Those chances come your way, you know, maybe not that many times, but, you know, it was nice to know that I made everything count when it needed it.
What's the rivalry like between the top South Africans, such as yourself, Louis, Charles and the others?
You know, we all want to win golf events. We're all very good friends. It's just, you know, we don't wish anything bad on one another, but we're all there to do a job and we're all there to try and win. You know, obviously coming close the last couple of years, you know, left a little sour taste in my mouth, not pulling it off, especially knowing that this was one of the ones that I really wanted in South Africa. And, you know, it's our national open and, you know, I really wanted to get my hands on it. And, you know, obviously this year coming out on top was magnificent. But, you know, I think, you know, we let each other on as well. You know, when we see the other ones doing better, maybe than what you are, you want to put in more time and effort and really succeed. So it's been great for the last 4 or 5 years.
A big year ahead. You've got that early victory. And among the rewards, of course, a place in this year's Open, which keeps your record going. How big a deal is that for you?
Oh, that's big. Obviously, you know, my main goal was to win the event. But obviously, these things getting into the Open, it's just a big bonus. You know, for me, it was, you know, obviously not qualifying at the end of the year last year. It was a really, you know, I was really disappointed. You know, it's the first time I'm actually out of that position where I'm not into the majors and things like that. And I really wanted to secure it this week. I came close last year. I three-putted the last hole to miss out last year as well for automatic spot. And then, you know, this year, knowing that it's done, it's awesome. You know, I played my first amateur there as well, so I know the place. I'm really excited to be going back, and obviously, like you said, it's nice to keep the streak alive and, you know, to go back and really relive those fond memories of the British Open that I do have with the Lowe's Major round and things like that. So I'm really excited to go back.
On to Abu Dhabi, a couple of top fives you've had there. Tell us about the course. Do you fancy your chances this week?
Yeah, I do. You know, I've always made one of my stops, you know, when I'm back in Europe. I love coming down to the Middle East. Abu Dhabi is a phenomenal golf course. It's probably one of the best condition golf courses that we play all year. It's one of those that actually I think it suits my eye as well. And, you know, like you said, I've been close. I feel this is one I can really perform at. So, you know, obviously, you know, I had a day off today and then head out to the golf course tomorrow and really put in some time and things in like that. And then try to prepare come Thursday and be ready to go. So, you know, just keep this good golf going, and you never know, maybe make it two in a row.
Brandon, thanks very much for taking time out of your very busy day. Have a fantastic week in Abu Dhabi, and congratulations on winning your national championship. We'll see you soon on the Race to Dubai show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Obviously, Brandon Ewan is thrilled with the win, and, you know, you never know how it can turn your career in the right direction. All of a sudden, you're a champion again, and you're looking forward instead of trying to figure it out.
The other thing is you never know if your last win is the last one. And the period he's gone through for a player of his standard. Remember, we were at Chambers Bay in 2015. He had a really good chance of winning the US Open there until he drove it out of bounds at 16. And sometimes you look at these mistakes then thinking, well, is that it? But he's bounced back, and that wouldn't at all surprise me if he was to go ahead and win a couple of more times this year. You know, the boost in confidence is enormous.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when we spoke to Adam Scott recently, he was talking about getting into his 40s and not knowing, questioning himself if he was going to win again. I mean, that's Adam Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, and but I think what you said earlier about it being a big boost to the confidence, Adam Scott also said that win at the end of last year, it was really sending him into this year with a lot of good vibes. And he was already looking ahead to sort of Augusta National, because he knew that when he's done well in the majors, yeah, it's been off the back of good form in the winter.
Well, stats for Grace, it was his ninth European Tour victory and his first since the 2017 Nedbank Golf Challenge. So he's no stranger to playing well down in South Africa. And he completes the set of the biggest trophies in South African golf after also winning the Joburg Open, the Alfred Dunhill Championship, and the Dimension Data Pro-Am. Well, we talked about Marcus Armitage at the top of the show. Brandon Grace earned a spot at this year's Open, of course, you know about that. But so did Marcus. He finished third on his own, and that was good enough. Let's hear his thoughts.
Magical. That's why I live. That is exactly why I live, just for moments like that. Yeah, I haven't won the tournament, but Brandon did fantastic today. So, you know, and I learned a lot from Leopard Creek, and I've brought that experience here today. I'll take it on to next week, and, you know, let's go and try and beat them boys next week.
Beginning of the round, on that tee box, Louis Oosthuizen, in your group, final group, how was that feeling on the first tee?
Yeah, well, I was secretly just watching how he, you know, was acting and stuff like that, and he's just a super chill guy. I thought, might not talk to these boys, you know, today, but I forced a few questions out of him on the way around, and, you know, I thought, I've just got to be me, and, yeah, it was just really relaxing.
When you started, after a few holes past your boy, and you seen yourself at the very top of that leaderboard, what was that feeling like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just absolutely fine, you know. I just didn't hit the quality of shots, you know. I missed a little putt on six, then a couple of poor tee shots, and I was just battling a little bit from there on. And then Brandon obviously went off, and Louis went off, and yeah, there's just no catching him really.
Just going away from your game slightly, what happened at eight? I mean, Louis, unbelievable, huh?
Fat block. I'll let him talk you through that, but I thought it were a fat block off the planet that went in the can. But he may have a different view on it. But yeah, it was a great shot, I suppose. Great, good, bad one. I suppose if you get your bad ones to go in the can like that, that's when you become Open champion and stuff like that.
So heart racing, coming up 18, what a wondrous second shot in there. Just talk us through what your emotions, what you were thinking over that putt, knowing what was up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, well, I did the hard. I stood on the 17th tee and I thought, right, you just made a mistake down 16. I thought, you've got three swings here, three quality swings. You've got that in you, Marcus. You know, I imagine that Anthony Sheehy, my coach, was stood there and was stood on the range. I imagine him were watching me, because I always put pure swings on him when he's watching me. I imagined he were there and I just hit the shots. And, you know, that putt on 18, I just, you know, a great read from Eric, and Yeah, just absolute ecstasy after holding that. Yeah, just went nuts. My body was going nuts inside. I mean, I've never had adrenaline like that. That's why these guys look so calm. I think they've had that adrenaline before. So, yeah, I'll take that with me. I'm in a good place at the moment.
Marcus Armitage, great stuff. Talking to Johnny Morgan from Sky Sports. Fantastic thing for him to have the disaster just a few weeks ago and now the ecstasy of finishing third and qualifying for the Open Championship. That, for him, is like winning a tournament.
Oh, completely, completely. But it's quite interesting that when somebody gets very close and doesn't perform very well in the final round. I remember a few years ago, Justin Rose talked about this. I think he led the Travelers Championship by 6 shots going into the weekend and didn't convert the win. A week later, he had the same thing at the Quicken Loans National, something like that, and he did it. And he said afterwards, everybody thought to themselves, you're going to collapse again at the weekend. He said the experience of not closing it out was what allowed him to close it out. And he said the difference between Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods and the rest is they get into contention so often, they remember the lessons when they're next have a chance. Marcus did so well because he got back into contention and he remembered what he did wrong last time and managed to turn it around this time.
A couple of things, Ewan. I thought it was interesting, his description of the Oosthuizen and Ace, which was a fat block.
Which finished up in the cant.
That's
right. I look forward to meeting him. Yeah. You know, I think he's a late bloomer. He's had one win on the Challenge Tour. And I look forward to meeting him next week because that finish also gets him in the Rolex Series events, the HSBC Championship at Abu Dhabi. And he'll go there on a high by the sound of it.
Yeah, sure. Well, you can read about Marcus Armitage's remarkable story this week's player blog at www.europeantour.com. The Englishman speaks about playing off scratch without a single lesson. Obviously, he's got a coach now, leaving school at 13 and playing the Open with a torn shoulder.
I've had a read of this, and this is fantastic. I mean, he talks about playing with Tommy Fleetwood, I think, in practice at that Open. And he said, Tommy just looked at him and says, what are you doing? As he's hitting sort of half shots with his driver. And he was just so desperate to play, he went out and did it.
I'm looking forward to watching how Marcus gets on this year because a bit of confidence, all of a sudden, he doesn't feel like he doesn't belong. He's starting to feel like he does belong. It could be a real roller coaster ride. So it's going to be a lot of fun for us golf watchers, no doubt about that. Jaco Allers was the third player to qualify alongside Brandon Grace, the champion, and Marcus Armitage. So he will play the Open as well. The South African finished fourth alongside Jack Senior, but Allers' superior world ranking secured his spot for the summer. Top 10, please, Ewan, in the South African Open.
If you forgive me, I'm going to start with the top 12.
You're forgiven.
Thank you, because Harry Hall, a young amateur from Cornwall, and you may remember this because I know you're a great historian, the first winner of a PGA Championship came from Cornwall. It was Jim Barnes back in 1916. So Cornwall on the golfing map with a very fine finish from Harry.
The Republic of Cornwall, is it? Or the Commonwealth of Cornwall?
It is, yeah. You need your passport to get into Devon.
I see.
So here is the top 11, because there was a six-way tie in sixth, and Martin Rohr was one of these. Another amateur, Jaden Trey Schapper, tremendous four rounds, 65, 67, 69, 70, and he tied with Andy Sullivan, J.C. Ritchie, George Coetzee, and Henny Duplessis. Really strong South African connection there in the top 11. Into the top five, and there was a tie, as we know, Senior and Allers for fourth place, Marcus in third. Louis did nothing wrong. Final round of 68, which included a hole-in-one, but no doubt Brandon Grace was the man of the week, and what a time to win. Beginning of the season, we'd best look out for him, I think, in 2020.
And straight to Abu Dhabi for the big money in the Rolex Series event, the first one of 2020. World rankings-wise, Armitage went from 1398 to 475. That's a colossal leap with a third-place finish. Schapper, who's obviously just at the start of his golfing career, hasn't turned pro yet, but 939 he is. Harry Hall, 728 from 1109. So some big jumps you can make on the European Tour.
Two amateurs in the top 12, I think, was very impressive. The last amateur to win was back in 1959. Dennis Hutchinson held off Gary Player. Player, of course, won the Open at Muirfield that year. And the Sunshine Tour announced a new event down there for 2020, and it's going to be played for the Dennis Hutchinson Trophy, which I thought was a wonderful moment from Selwyn Nathan, the top man down there on the Sunshine Tour. And I think that's an event that's been welcomed by many in that part of the world.
As the winner picks up the trophy, will it be an enormous bottle of whiskey?
Probably.
Now, last week's pick, I was with Richard Boxall and Kit Alexander. A reminder, everyone gets two picks, but one has to come from outside last year's top 50 on the Race to Dubai rankings. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, and crucially, as you'll find out, minus 5 points for a missed cut. Richard Boxall went for Eric Van Rooyen, tied 22nd, 0 points, and Brandon Stone, who missed the cut, so he was minus 5. Kit went for Louis Oosthuizen, second, 10 points, and Sean Norris tied 36, 0 points, so 10 points for the guests. And I went for Justin Harding and Xander Lombard, who both, and it's a Race to Dubai, first, missed the cut by a shot, both of them. So that's minus 5 times 2, that's minus 10 for the presenters. I have had a very bad week. I'll be going to the States shortly for a few weeks, so Dan Roebuck will be picking up my mantle and trying to even make our total worse. So you're in a great position this week, Matt.
Fantastic, and I understand that the guests won last season.
There's no need to gloat. There's no need to. I believe it's a rumour.
Yes, well, I'm quite pleased. I picked John Rahm at the end, so we just pinched it.
You mustn't be too hard on yourself, because what I really admire about you is your consistency.
That's right.
It's quite remarkable.
I can do it week in, week out. Week in, week out. And my wallet is there to prove the point. No doubt about it. If only we could bet on golf, but we're not allowed to. So presenters are on 10 points. Co-presenters are on 10 points. Ewan and I are tied, as it were. And way out in front, the early leaders, about to choke, coming down the stretch, are the guests. Now, the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, you can make your own predictions each week by heading to europeantour.com to register for the New Year's Fantasy season. The 2020 Fantasy Race to Dubai season will launch very soon. Let's remind you of the Race to Dubai top 10.
Strong South African connection, as you'd expect, because of the events we've had down there in the early part of the season. In 10th place is Charles Schwartz. So good to see him back on the fairways after his injuries. Johannes Veerman is in 9th place. Antoine Rosner is in 8th. Renato Paratori, who's already tucked away a win on the European Tour, in 7th place. Louis Oosthuizen, with that finish last week, moves to just outside the top 5. Into the top 5, Joel Schoen, back on tour after 1 or 2 years having lost his form. Adam Scott in 4th. Rasmus Højgaard is in 3rd place, and Pablo Larrazábal, with his early victory, is in 2nd. But Brendan Grace, by winning his national title last week, takes over the number 1 spot.
Now, on the PGA Tour, in other news, Cameron Smith won his 2nd tour title with the dramatic playoff win at the Sony Open in Hawaii. He closed out a final round of 68 to tie Brendan Steele, and at the first extra hole, he got the job done. Webb Simpson ended the week in 3rd spot with Graham McDowell, 2 shots off the pace, share of 4th for the Northern Irishmen, so good to see Graham playing well at the start of 2020. Hong Kong Open was played in a different slot to normal. Normally it's the end of the year, and it was another win for Wade Ormsby, who seems to like that golf course, Fan Ling, very much.
Yeah, love it. He's a neat player, tee to green, that's what that course calls for. And it's also a place that people who do well there, they tend to repeat their form time and time again, and he's kind of backed that up big time.
And Ewan's making his way to the Middle East straight after this show, and you'll see Shane Lowry there doing a bit of globetrotting at the start of the season.
That's right, and of course defending the title he won in great style 12 months ago, one of the shots of the year, a 3-wood second to the par 5 18. He's had quite a long layoff. He had the best part of 6 weeks off at the end of last year. He's got maybe some of the rust out of the way in Hong Kong. Good finish there. So I would expect he'll put up a strong defence of that title.
I suspect he probably will. And in the Solheim Cup, we know who the European captain is. Pat Hurst will be joining Beeney as her opposition before they head to the Solheim Cup 2021 in Ohio. Paddy Hurst has been around that event for a long, long time.
She has a very fine player, good record she has in the singles and the foursomes, the four balls, which make up the Solheim Cup. So, like Julie Engster, a lot of experience in there, and a big task ahead for Katrina Mathieu. You go over to the United States, it's a little different to home territory.
Yeah, if she can bottle what they had on that last day in Gleneagles, it just seems like a few weeks ago, maybe they'll have a chance to take on the Americans on their soil. We shall see. 2021 for that one, September of. Before we move on to the next event on the European Tour, Ewan, give us the top 10 of the world rankings.
Tommy Fleetwood hangs on to 10th place. Justin Rose in 9th, surprisingly not playing in the HSBC, but playing in Singapore this week. Xander Schauffele is in 8th place. Tiger Woods occupies 7. Patrick Cantlay we'll see over in Abu Dhabi this week. He's in 6th. Into the top 5, and a very impressive top 5 it is. Dustin Johnson at 4. Justin Thomas, a radio winner this year. European number 1 last year, John Rahm. And the only 2 players ahead of him, Rory McIlroy and Kepka. And that rivalry, one feels, will go all the way through the whole of 2020.
Even though Brooks says there isn't a rivalry. We all know there is. We love a bit of rivalry. That's what we want. And we've got that. Those top 3 players in the world rankings, Justin Thomas tucked in behind. Unbelievably good. Unbelievably good. OK, the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA is just days away. It's a really good golf course. I can't believe sometimes, Ewan, how low they go around there.
Well, it's going to be a different golf course for sure this year because they've had unprecedented rain over the course of the last 10 days and the golf course is soaking. I never thought that would happen in Abu Dhabi. It's a beautiful course. It's matured nicely in its 15 years of its life and designed by Peter Haradine, who was a prolific designer in that part of the world. It's certainly a favourite with the players, as all the courses in the Middle East are. But I'm looking at someone who hits the ball a long way to win that this week.
Yeah, I mean, it always helps, doesn't it? $7 million to be played for, Matt, and there are some big hitters going down there, not just in their world rankings, but also in how far they can hit the ball. Cantlay's there. He hits the ball a long way. He's right up there in the top 10. And, of course, the world number one's pitching up.
Yeah, and I also noticed, I was looking at the strokes gain stats. It's a good job I haven't got a couple of our occasional co-presenters here who go a little bit funny in the eye when I mention stats. But I was looking at the strokes gain stats, and the top 5 last year on the leaderboard, the stats that really matter, were all top 5 strokes gained tee to green. And that's quite unusual for it to be that precise. Putting has never really been like a huge issue here. It's been a ball striker's course, and the stats back that up.
Great finish to the golf course as well, Ewan. Coming down the stretch there. A lot of shots you've got to play.
Yeah, lovely combination of holes. The dogleg 16th, 90-degree dogleg left to right. One of the best par 4s we have on the European Tour is 17 up and over the water. And I rather like par 5s to finish off with because so much can happen, so much does, and so much probably will next week. Eagles, birdies, and of course drop shots as well.
Give us an idea, Ewan, who's pitching up there now. I've already mentioned 2 world top tenors, Koepka and Cantlay.
We must mention Tommy Fleetwood. His record is astonishing around there. Bryson DeChambeau is back. Danny Willett, of course, reborn. A tremendous comeback. One of the best comebacks you'll see in the game. Slightly overshadowed maybe by the comeback of Tiger Woods, but nevertheless, it was all very impressive. And Sergio Garcia is there as well. So you have some top players. Martin Kaiman, another one with an amazing record, but has never really recovered from being 10 shots ahead going down the 6th on the final day and not closing that event out. That's definitely left a mark, I think, in the back of the mind. We've talked about the South Africans, Oosthuizen and Grace. They go there, of course, with great form. Lee Westwood also in the field. And, of course, Westwood got his invite for the Masters, having finished 4th in the Open at Royal Port Rush. So lots of storylines there, and we'll look forward to delivering all of them to you.
Yeah, who sort of grabs your attention, Matt, when you look at those names? Because there's a lot of juicy ones to pick.
There are, and we were just mentioning that Tommy's got a great record here, but it's a strange course, this. It's a little bit like Le Golf National. You get players who thrive one year and are terrible the next. So Tommy's missed 4 cuts there, but he's also won twice. Shane Lowry had finished 4th on his debut, missed 3 cuts, and then he won. It's quite a sort of common thread of how people, you know, they either do very, very well or actually do quite poorly. Another name to pull out, Thomas Peters, 3 top 5s in just 6 visits to the course. That's pretty impressive.
I think Thomas Peters, we were talking last week about a player outside, a European outside the top 50 in the world who could make it into the top 20 in the world. Now, maybe no one does it because it's a hard thing to do. But if there is anyone lurking at around 80th in the race in the world rankings, it's Thomas Peters.
Yeah. Another one who's got a fine record here, Sergio, has come 6 times to Abu Dhabi and he's never finished outside the top 20. That said, he's never really contended that much. But that kind of harks back to this notion that it's a good ball striker's place. And Thomas Peters, of course, harks to the idea that not only good ball striking, but with plenty of length from the tee.
So what we normally do with our predictions is you have to pick somebody from outside last year's top 50 in the Race to Dubai and anyone else that you think might win the tournament. It's a free pick. But you are slightly hamstrung because you've got to look for that person last year that didn't perhaps play as well as he would have liked to have done. So because this is a Rolex Series event, this year we're going to change it slightly. As it's a Rolex Series event, it's a biggie. It's different from the mainstay of the European Tour. You can just pick any two people that you want that you think might win this tournament. That's in the field.
Okay, and I get first pick, do I?
And you get first pick because you're on 40 points. You get first pick.
Okay, in which case,
We're going to go round and around here.
I'm going to go Victor Hovland.
I don't blame you. Why?
I think everybody who's watched him is very, very impressed by the guy. He hasn't quite got the win yet, but his consistency, his potential is fantastic.
Do you know, I stood in the range, I'm pretty sure, I think it was at the John Deere Classic last year, and Morikawa, Hovland and Wolf.
Right.
All next to each other in the range, all hitting balls. And I looked at them all and I thought, it's hard to actually say which one of these is going to be the best, have the best career, but they're brilliant players. Hovland, great pick. Ewan?
I'm going to go for Patrick Cantlay, which is maybe not too sensible because it's the first time he's played there and it's a long way over from where he last played. In fact, the other side of the world. But I do think it's going to take someone who hits the ball quite a long way and he's not short of yardage off the tee. And then I'm going with a home player.
No, you just get one. We're going to go round again. You just hold your horses. You don't get your two straight away because he might get pinched now because you can have anyone you want. It's open. And so nobody's gone for the world number one, Brooks Koepka.
No. I'm a little bit concerned. Last time
the knee
we've
injury.
Seen him, he missed cut in the Shriners, withdrew at the CJ Cup.
He injured himself.
Yeah.
He slipped on his the knee packed in in Korea.
Yeah.
And hasn't played since then.
No, I'm happy to play a bit of a watching game with him, especially as, I mean, I think it's a bit of an old hackneyed idea, this business that he's not that fussed about anything other than the majors. I think that.
Oh, it's good chat, isn't it, from Brooks? It's good chat. I think he's a fantastic. If I get a chance on the range to go and watch somebody hit balls and Brooks is there, I'll always go and watch Brooks Koepka. The noise when he hits it is just sensational. It's golf geeky stuff, but I just love it. And like you, because the knee. I guess he's turning up here because he's fit again, but we need to see a few reps with the knee to see if it's holding up. So I'm going to hold fire on Brooks Koepka and go with Tommy Fleetwood as my first pick. Tommy Fleetwood is my first pick. So now I hand it back to Matt. I've just pinched you in second pick there.
Pinched my second pick as well. Look at that. Tommy and Victor written down. Right, I shall go elsewhere, and I am going to go for a conservative pick, but six starts in Abu Dhabi, six top 20s for Sergio Garcia, and I'm going to...
That was going to be my second pick, so there we are.
So there we go. I'm going to...
Sergio and Victor.
Sergio and...
Pretty cool.
Well, I mean, you've stolen just about everything, you two. I'm going to go for a successful defence of the title from Shane Lowry.
Well, fresh
don't
off
look at me like that.
No, but fresh off finishing second in Hong Kong.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got form going in here.
He has.
Loves the golf course.
Yes.
And his putting coming down the stretch last year, because it wasn't always the tee to green golf that he wanted. It was super brave. Really was impressive.
Yeah, Richard Stanley and him were neck and neck, but he had such an advantage over the first nine holes, Lowry, then lost it, then got it back, and that says a lot. It didn't surprise me that he became a major champion. So my second pick is Shane.
Okay, I'm gonna balance the books and go with Thomas Peters. I know he's a pet of mine. I know he's one of, you know, if I got a chance to pick Thomas Peters, but I just feel at some point he's going to get engaged and he's going to perform like he can. And I think this is a big year for him. He said for him, it's not exactly wilderness. That's too strong a word. But for him, he's nowhere near high enough up the world ranking. So all of a sudden you can go from sort of mid-80s world ranking-wise, you win an HSBC Rolex Series event in Abu Dhabi and your career looks very different. So
he's also a guy who seems to, if he likes a course, he'll thrive there time and again. What is it, twice he's won at Albatross in the Czech Masters? Had such a good record here. Yeah.
Do you think it's a horses-for-courses layout, this one? Because some venues seem to be that way and some don't.
I do, but having looked at the weather forecast and what's happened over the last week, I don't think that'll be the case this year. I think this is going to be a very different Abu Dhabi Golf Club from what we've seen over the course of the 15 years when Chris DeMarco won for the first time. So I'm going for these two, Cantley for the length off the tee.
Yeah.
And the quality of Shane Lowry.
And the hand on my right is flicking now.
I see that.
It's Matt's left hand, it's flicking. There's an index finger coming towards me. Matt, what do you got?
I was just thinking, just going back to when we were discussing Louis finishing second, beating the rest of the field, and then the name Chris DeMarco just flares up, because I think he's one of the most unforgotten, excellent major performers, because when he played the Masters in 2005...
Or forgotten, indeed.
Forgotten, yeah.
Yeah.
He thrashed the field by, I think, seven shots at the Masters. Retief Goosen, I think, was third. But he had the misfortune to tie Tiger, who beat him in the playoff.
That's and where then, the chip in at 16 happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a short while later, he beat third by three places at Hoylake in the Open. But the only man who was ahead of him was Tiger again. So, but for those two performances, Chris DeMarco would have beaten the field at the Masters by seven shots and in an Open by three. I mean, that's... it. You know, if some buts and maybes were whatever, my aunt would be my uncle. But nobody ever remembers him when they think of people who never won a major.
Late at night, Matt. Late at night, when you put your head in your pillow and you close your eyes, what do you see?
I think of Chris DeMarco.
Do you think?
And I think of Ernie Els, and maybe he's the greatest. Maybe he's one of the greatest major performers we've ever known. But Tiger Woods was there. I believe me, this isn't even a joke.
Ewan, anything to add to that?
Really, nothing at all.
I didn't think
absolutely nothing.
I'm looking forward to our first Rolex Series event of 2020. No doubt about that. There's always an extra buzz when that comes to town, and we'll all be in Abu Dhabi. Well, Ewan actually physically will be in Abu Dhabi with his Wellington boots, because apparently the TV compound, Ewan, is swamped and underwater.
Yes, amazing. It never rains in Abu Dhabi. It never rains in Dubai, but right now they have floods in the desert. But all will be dry by Thursday morning.
Just in time for your two-week holiday. That's it for now. Next week, we will review the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA and look ahead to the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the official website and app, as well as on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But for now, from Ewan Murray, who's gone for?
Yes, I have, yes. Shane Lowry, defending champion, he's going to win. Or maybe it'll be Patrick Cantley playing in Abu Dhabi for the first time.
And Matt Cooper, who's gone for?
The Spanish-Norwegian alliance of Sergio Garcia and Victor Hovland.
Pretty strong pairing, those two. And I've gone for Tommy Fleetwood, a two-time winner, and maybe he's going to make it 3 out of 4 years on the run. Exceptional stuff. And Thomas Peters, the Belgian, who's going to go climbing and surging back up towards that world number one spot. From all of us, it's goodbye.